Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. Lovely to have you with us. My name is Kieran Tavam and I am once again joined by my good friend out in the United States, JJ Duke. JJ, we are less than a week from the Rio Olympics. It's exciting times, my friend.
Feeling all Olympic. I think it was the great Cool Runnings movie that said, I feel all Olympic inside.
I feel all Olympic inside.
Representation right now.
Absolutely. I'm feeling the rhythm. I'm feeling the ride. I'm getting on up. It's Olympic time, my friend. It is
nice.
Olympic time.
Well,
absolutely. Absolutely. If you're going to reference Cool Runnings, then so am I. But the purpose of this show is to have a look ahead to the Rio Olympics. Of course, the women's football, or for you guys in North America, the women's soccer, kicks off in just a few days' time, 2 days ahead of the opening ceremony. Don't forget that, guys. The opening ceremony is on the 5th of August. The football tournament, much like the last time out in London, kicks off 2 days early. So JJ and I are going to have a look at the groups. We're not going to go through team by team because there are plenty of people doing that with articles online, and there are other podcasts that I'm sure are doing this, but we want to have a bit of an overview of the groups and maybe talk about a few different subjects. We've got a few guests along the way to analyse their respective countries as well. So we'll crack on after this short break with Group E, which features Brazil, China, Sweden and South Africa. So we'll be back after this break.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So, welcome back. JJ, as we mentioned just before the break, we're going to crack on with having a look at Group E at the Olympics. And of course, that includes the hosts, Brazil. It includes Asian qualifiers, China. European qualifiers, Sweden, who of course came through that mini tournament as a result of Team GB not being represented in this tournament, and South Africa. So, well, as I said, we're not going to go through them individually team by team, but I think we want to kind of pick out the main talking points. And I guess the first one for me is we of course mentioned the fact that Brazil, the hosts, are in this group. If there was ever a time for Brazil to turn up to a major tournament, this is it, isn't it? Because you've got players like Marta, certainly like Formiga, who are going to be playing for her, almost certainly her last tournament. But for Marta, she's not getting any younger. And if she's going to get that elusive gold medal, this could well be the time.
Well, it's funny that you talk about that, Kieran. And it's always been a question now for Brazil, at least over these past couple of years. Which Brazil team is going to show up? Is it going to be the team that was dominant in 2007, 2008, that being the World Cup and the Olympics back-to-back? Or is it kind of this almost current Brazil team where they just can't punch their weight, you know? They can't figure out a way to get the result that they need to get. Obviously, the big one coming last year in the World Cup, they win all their group stage matches, not convincingly, but they did the job. And then they play Australia and just look all out of sorts, and they lose to Australia in the round of 16, didn't even have a chance to make any sort of a run. And you look at it now, so that would be in their last big major tournaments, 2011 Women's World Cup quarterfinal, 2012 Olympics quarterfinal, 2015 Women's World Cup round of 16. And, oh, by the way, we all know that minus 1996, the hosts have never made it past the quarterfinal round, so history is against them, and form hasn't been there as well. But you did bring up those interesting points with, you know, this being perhaps Marta's and almost for sure Formiga's last major tournament, especially being in their home country.
Yeah, I mean, Marta, I'm almost certain, will go to the World Cup in 2019, but I would suggest that this is possibly her last Olympic Games, especially being that it's in front of the home crowd. I mean, as I said, I don't want to focus too much individually on teams, but when I look at that group, Brazil will be pleased, won't they? Because they've got in there China, who finished runners-up in Asian qualifying behind Australia. Sweden, we've said it before, very fortunate to be there. And you saw South Africa play against the United States recently. It was a 1-0 win for the US, wasn't it? I think it was Crystal Dunn that got the winner in that game, and I know they put up a resolute performance. But when we look at that group, Brazil will be pleased, won't they? Because while there are some challenges in there, it could have been a lot worse when you look at the other two groups.
No, naturally. I mean, you know, that's the nature of this tournament, where you have only 12 teams. You have to have representatives from the confederations, to be fair, Africa and Oceania, that are not as strong right now in the women's game, and even so outright with South America. Granted, Brazil is one of the two South America representatives. Even without being that host, they would have still qualified for this tournament easily. But yeah, no, they dodged a bullet, plain and simple. Their first match is going to be against China. That will be, in my opinion, probably the toughest match. And people are going to say, well, why is that? Because Sweden outside of China would be the best, you know, opposition. But playing that first match, especially that is going to be in Rio proper, that's going to be the one where the nerves are going to have to get away quickly. But if they can have a key performance from Marta and from that back line, China, as we know, they've been a team that will be streaky. They're going to go on some goal binges at times, and then they're going to go through stretches, at least historically, where they're not going to score a whole lot of goals. If Brazil can put a resolute performance there, they should be fine. If they lose that match, however, they will have Sweden, and Sweden gets to play South Africa, and that is the opening match of the tournament. You would figure that Sweden's going to be favorites to win that match, and if, say, Sweden wins and Brazil doesn't get 3 points, that makes that second match that pits those two teams together very pivotal for that number one spot.
Yeah, you mentioned Sweden and South Africa. They, of course, met each other in the group stages at London 2012 as well. I think it was Sweden that came out 4-1 winners in that game. And we discussed it in the last show with when we were talking about Linköping and how well they've been doing in the Damallsvenskan. 5 players have come from Linköping into this Sweden squad, and there's a couple of youngsters in there, one of which I'm really looking forward to seeing, and that's Fridolina Rolfö. She actually scored in a game recently in Sweden's last outing. Current silver medalists. They won't become this tournament because they haven't qualified. They beat Japan in a recent friendly 3-0, and she scored in that game. I like what Sweden have done since the World Cup last year. They've lost some of the older heads, some of which weren't necessarily through their choice. Players like Teresa Sjogren have retired since the World Cup last year. But they brought in younger players, and they have really, really impressed since coming in. Their European qualification is going very well. They came through that mini tournament in Holland. I spoke to Nilla Fischer for an Olympic preview that's due to come out soon, and she said they weren't necessarily hugely confident going into that tournament, but they got the job done. I understand where you're coming from with China, and I do think they will present a big test for Brazil. But I like what Pia Sundhage has done with Sweden since their disappointments in Canada last year.
Yeah, no, I mean, you have a mix of youth players and veterans that have experienced the Olympic tournament. And let's face the facts, unlike a World Cup, the Olympics is a different beast. You can't slip. You can't afford to slip in a tournament like this. And travel is going to be an issue. Quick turnaround is going to be an issue because, let's face it also, it's 2 days of rest between matches. These are very quick turnarounds in between fixtures. So if you have a few players that can lead the way and can help you along the way to get that quick recovery, focus on the next match. You can't carry one bad performance, if there is a bad performance, into the next one, because 2 bad performances means you're probably finishing in third place. And, well, by the way, the next team that's going to be facing will be the U.S. or France. Especially in that group. So you have that mix. I like it. I'm with you. But I think also at the same time, when you look at the major results of the last major tournaments for Sweden, they almost need to kind of get out of their own way a little bit and play a little more free-flowing to have an impact. And if they do, then they're going to be successful.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. I like what they're doing. I'm just looking at their squad. I see 4 players over the age of 30 for Sweden, and that is what I would describe as the spine of that team in Hedvig Lindahl, Nilla Fischer, Caroline Sager and Lotta Schelin, the only players in that 18 over the age of 30. And I've said in previous interviews and pieces that I've written, I think that spine will be hugely important, but it's good that they have a lot of young players around them. You saw South Africa, as I mentioned, in the game against the United States that they lost. I think a lot of people were probably expecting South Africa to get beat more convincingly, but they showed that they are made of stern stuff, didn't they? And I mean, what did you make of them, and what sort of impression do you think not only can they make on this group, but as the Olympics as a whole?
You know, it's definitely going to be a different team than we saw in 2012. I think really for that team, their lone big moment was when Portia Modise lobbed Hedvig Lindahl from half. I mean, that was really, well, actually, that was their only goal to begin with. And they got beaten pretty badly in the two matches. And then by the third one, they're playing Japan that, you know, they put in an effort, but it was also a time where Japan really wasn't looking for anything more than a result. It did come back to bite them a little bit when Sweden got a draw with Canada, which knocked Japan down to a different spot in the bracket. We leave that there. For this South Africa team, they're going to need to play without fear. But if there was a group that you wanted to be drawn into, similar to Brazil, this is a group for South Africa. If they can find a way to nick off some points, perhaps against China, you have Sweden in that first match. Again, it's always that first match in any group of any tournament. It's always the one that's a little bit interesting to watch because that's where you can take advantage of a team at its weakest. They haven't gotten their feet wet in the tournament. And if South Africa can start brightly, they're going to face China in the next match, not Brazil. That's a big factor right there, because if they can get points from their first two, that might be enough before they face Brazil, funny enough, in the Amazon, not in the capital city, not in Rio, but in the Amazon, where really you can throw anything out the door there. It's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. It's going to be there for the taking, and you never know. That could be a real dark horse to get to the quarterfinal. I'm not going to say they're getting any further than the quarterfinal, but just don't write them off yet.
No, completely agree. So you've mentioned their quarterfinals. We're going to make a few predictions because we're going to stick our neck out throughout this show. And maybe what we'll do is, I'll tell you what we'll do, mate. We won't make any bold predictions in terms of outcomes, but what we'll do is we will write down who we think the winner will be, who the silver medalist and the bronze medalist will be, and who the top scorer will be. And at the end of the tournament, we can reveal what we went with and see how right we were or how badly wrong we were. How about that?
Okay, so basically what you're saying is we're not going to be saying anything, but we got to put down what we think.
In terms of winners, silver medalists and bronze medalists, okay, and top scorer, but I think we can make some predictions in terms of who comes out of the groups and who we think might be the standout player. So in terms of that group, how do you see it finishing in terms of top three? Who's going through? And who do you think the player to watch is in that group?
Well, I do say that this is going to be one of the two groups that will have a third-place team go through. I'm going to put that out there right now. I said Brazil takes it, but on goal difference, over Sweden. And then China finishes in third. South Africa puts in three-game efforts, but not able to advance. So that's Brazil 1, Sweden 2, China 3.
Okay. I'm going to agree with you to an extent. I do think Brazil finished top. I'm going to go China second because I just wonder how Sweden are going to deal with the conditions. It is going to be very hot out there. If you look at some of the kickoff times, for us over here in Europe and the UK, we are going to be having some very late nights because some of the games kick off 1, 2 o'clock in the morning our time. You're looking at 10 o'clock local time, 9 o'clock local time for some of these games. And I do wonder how the European nations deal with that heat and that humidity. So I'm going to go China second. I'm going to go Sweden third. In terms of my standout player, I don't know how much she's going to get in terms of game time because they are very stacked in terms of the attacking play. But I've said it before and I'm going to stick my neck out. I'm looking forward to seeing Fridolina Rolfö for Sweden. I saw her, as I've said before, play for Linköping a few times, saw her in the UEFA Women's Champions League against Liverpool, tore them apart in that game. She's a really, really exciting young player, and she's my player. You didn't name yours, though, mate.
Yes, I did have to take a second, but no, I'm going to stick to my guns a little bit, try and at least talk about things that I'm somewhat knowledgeable about and have a background. I've been impressed. I've said it before on social media about Andressa's play with the Houston Dash, and she is in the Brazil team. I'm going to say I'm curious to see how she goes about it. I mean, that's a tough midfield to break into. But at the same time, you know what? Got a little pace, good ability to spread the field when she has possession, and can also track back and play both ways as well. So I'm going to give Andressa the nod, or as it says, Andressinha on the official team sheet.
great stuff. Okay, so some predictions there from Group E. And after the break, we will concentrate our focus on Group F. Right, she's not been on the show for a little while, but being that Sweden are in Group A in the Olympics, I wanted to get my good friend from Sweden, Linda Eriksson, back on the show. Linda, I think it's probably been about a year since you were on, which is pretty shameful. How are you doing?
Hi, Karen. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. I'm going to say shameful on my part, certainly not on yours. We obviously want to have a chat about Sweden, being that they have snuck in through the back door, for want of a better term, into the Olympics after having to qualify through the mini tournament in the Netherlands earlier this year, taking Team GB's place. I guess the first question I'd ask is, what's the thoughts of people in Sweden going into the Olympics? Is there a lot of optimism?
So, but there honestly hasn't been a lot of talk yet about the Olympics. I guess it's because there's so many different sports. It's not like the World Cup where the women's team is getting a lot of attention. But they did get a little bit a couple of days ago when they played a friendly against Botafogo in Brazil. They were supposed to play 16-year-old boys, but Botafogo felt five or six of their U20 players needed match practice, so they put them in the starting lineup and made it very difficult for Sweden. But so Sweden lost 8-0 in that game. But media was so very, very positive because apparently the team stayed positive throughout the game and they continued to attempt new ways of getting through. And a player that impressed the journalists especially was Kosovar Aslani, who they wrote quite a bit about because she has gained a lot of muscle. And she said herself she's been working very hard all year to build muscle and get stronger since joining Manchester City.
Yeah, I think I saw that on your Twitter feed that they were impressed with her. And obviously we over here get to see a lot of Kosovari now because she, as you say, has joined Manchester City Women. She is a regular starter in the team. I think Nick Cushing, the head coach of Man City, has been impressed with her. Maybe hasn't scored as many goals as she would have liked, but I think her contribution to the team has been quite important, and obviously her signing brought a lot of attention onto the FAWSL. I saw the result against Botafogo, and I'm sure that an 8-0 defeat for anyone is not pleasant, but as you say, you know, when you've got young lads of 19, 20 years old who are no doubt very, very skilled and probably have that athletic and athleticism and pace that maybe the women's team can't keep up with, it would probably have been more the test rather than the result that would have been important, I'm sure. I mean, when you look at the chances of a medal, when you look at the team that Pia Sundhage has selected to go to Rio, what do you feel the team's chances are of perhaps medaling this year?
I don't think they're very high, but there's definitely a possibility. I think both the team and Pia Sundhage want some revenge for how badly they did in the World Cup. And they have ended up in a fairly simple group in the Olympics. They should reasonably be able to win all of those games and get an easy opponent in the quarterfinals.
A lot of confidence there, Linda. A lot of confidence. They've got Brazil in their group. They've got the host nation. That is certainly not a simple one in my eyes, but we'll see.
It is the host nation, but yeah, I would say Sweden usually beat Brazil.
Okay, well, we shall see. I mean, how important do you think it is that Sweden does well? Because they were so disappointing at the World Cup. I spoke to Nilla Fischer earlier this year, and she acknowledges that they were very under par at the World Cup, and now this is an opportunity to almost put things right. I mean, how important is it from the Swedish media and the Swedish public's perspective that they try and prove a few people wrong and do well down in Rio?
I think it's quite important because they were obviously very disappointed themselves, but I think the Swedish people were quite surprised by how badly they did, and Sundhage especially got a lot of criticism. People wanted her to resign immediately after the World Cup and were not very happy when the Federation decided to keep her on. So I think this is her last chance. She is leaving anyway after this, as far as I know, but this is sort of her chance to prove that she is as good as she sort of said she was, and the idea that was that when she was joining Sweden that she would get us a medal, and she obviously failed to do that.
Okay, well, I guess, as you say, possibly last opportunity. If she did do it, it would be an incredible achievement, because it would, of course, mean that she's won three gold medals on the trot, because she, of course, won with the US women's national team in 2008 and 2012. I mean, if they are going to do well, Linda, where do you think the strengths in this Sweden team lie?
It's quite difficult. I think they have just gotten better. They've become better at working together, it seems like, this past year at playing together. It was sort of, in the World Cup, it seemed like the different players weren't quite connecting, and they weren't, they didn't perform individually very much, and it seems like they are a bit more confident and happy and should be able to do that now. But we'll see. There's no way of telling before the tournament starts.
And I guess my final question, we're talking about strengths. I mean, in my eyes, one of the major strengths of this Sweden team is that spine of Hedvig Lindahl and Nilla Fischer, Caroline Seger and Lotta Schelin, without question, the four most experienced players in that squad. How important do you think it is, and how much will that team want to do well for that spine, because players like Seger and Schelin and Fischer, it may well be their last Olympics. We know that they are coming towards the back end of their career. They've still got a few years left in them, no doubt about that, but you know, the next Olympics isn't for another 4 years. It may well be that they're not involved at that time. How much do you think the team will want to do well for those players, because they have been so influential on that Swedish team over such a long period of time?
I suppose you are right. Sweden's star players are starting to get a bit older, and it's probably their last Olympics, maybe even someone's last tournament in general. And it is kind of now or never in some sense, because we don't have any young star players that have come through yet. I'm sure we'll get some, but this is definitely, it feels a bit like the last chance to do really well for a while.
Well, we shall find out. We shall find out. Still plenty of quality in that team, and I think I've mentioned it in previews and on Twitter. I like certain players. I like Fridolina Rolfo. I think she is a young player coming through, and there are a few others as well. I know that what you're saying, they're not stars yet, but there's certainly the potential for them to be stars, but we'll have to wait and see, and obviously how much of a chance they actually get. Well, Linda, you open the tournament on Wednesday against South Africa, so the world will be watching, I'm sure, and I'm sure that it's going to be a fascinating tournament for all involved. Thank you. It's been a while, as I said, but thanks as always for joining us, and enjoy the Olympics, of course.
Thank you. You too.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So, welcome back. Group E covered. Group F we move on to. Group F consists of, well, you could say possibly the group of death, depending on who you support. So, Group F contains bronze medalists from London 2012, Canada, contains Australia, Zimbabwe and Germany, who surprisingly, some may remember, missed the London 2012 Olympics after a poor performance at their home World Cup in 2011. JJ, I like this group. I'm really excited about it. And the reason I'm excited about it is because, by my own admittance, I don't know a huge amount about Zimbabwe. I don't know how much you know. But when I look at the other three teams, there are a lot of young individuals. And I think there is a lot of exciting games ahead in this group.
Well, I mean, if you can't get excited about the first match of that group being Canada versus Australia, which it would be fair to say, those two teams, I'm going to book this statement right now, Kieran. I know you said not to make a bold statement. This is not going to be a bold statement about this tournament, but it's going to be about the next major tournament in 2019. These two teams have a very good chance of being in semifinals in the 2019 Women's World Cup. And the reason why is because their young core is now starting to flex their muscles a little bit in these major tournaments. We've obviously known about Australia for quite a while now, and Tom Cermani brought in that group back, what was it, the 2011 World Cup, when they were all 16, 17, 18-year-olds. They're now seasoned young 20-year-old professionals, or 21-year-olds, however you go about it, with some veterans in there. And, of course, Lisa Devana, who's, you know, major tournament comes, she's going to find a way to score a big goal. This is a group that is going to be a little too hard to handicap, because one slip either way by any one of those three big teams, and I will be with you also, I know about zero of the Zimbabwe team, but of the other three, one slip or one moment of magic could determine who's going to be finishing first through third.
Yeah, and I will in advance apologize to listeners. The aim was to try and get someone on to speak about Zimbabwe. Time has got away from me. Not JJ's fault, completely mine. Would have liked to have got someone on who has a bit more knowledge on Zimbabwe. Unfortunately, in the time that we've had, we haven't been able to do that. So, of course, if I get an opportunity during the tournament to have a little chat about Zimbabwe, I will happily get someone on to do that. But I've just looked at the Australia squad, JJ. You mentioned Lisa Devana, one, the only player over the age of 30. They have an unbelievable amount of young talent. We know about the Samantha Kerrs, the Caitlin Fords. Ellie Carpenter, I think 16 years old. I think the youngest member, not just of the Matildas, but the youngest Australian athlete who will be representing the country in Rio. I mean, that is unbelievable, isn't it? People in America, we know we have a lot of American listeners, have talked about Mallory Pugh at 18 being very young to go to the Olympics. 16-year-old Ellie Carpenter. That's incredible, isn't it, to be an Olympian before your 18th birthday?
Oh, it's absolutely insane. I mean, you know, last year, keeping it within the group, Canada had Jessie Fleming, who was a 17-year-old, and she was playing for the national team when she was 16. I mean, they always say that players and professionals are getting younger and younger, and that's just a testament to how good, you know, these players are. If you are a good player, someone will come and find you and sign you to a contract. And, yeah, that core for Australia, man, if they can put it together in this tournament, they have a realistic chance to go all the way. But then on the other side, if Canada and Germany put it together, then they're going to be in real trouble, because, you know, I have this group also having a third-place team that goes through, which would eliminate any third-place team from Group G in my projections. But, yeah, if you slip, you're playing Brazil in a quarterfinal in Brazil, which is not an ideal circumstance.
No, it's really not. It's really not. And that is not a position that any team wants to be in. How much credit does John Herdman need to take for where Canada are at the moment? We spoke about Sweden and Pia Sundhage having to make difficult decisions and having to maybe leave out some players that have maybe been important in the past because of the poor performance at the World Cup last year. More so, I would say, John Herdman and Canada have made changes. When you look at the squad that took part in Canada last year in their home World Cup, didn't get as far as they would have liked, obviously got eliminated by England. They have an abundance of young talent in there now, don't they? Gonar, the likes of Carl Moscato, Lauren Sesselman, Adriana Leon. In come a lot of young players, Ashley Lawrence, Rebecca Quinn, really talented young individuals. Lost their last friendly in France 1-0 to a Camille Abeli free kick, but they've made a lot of changes as well, haven't they? And they look an exciting team.
Well, this is now the culmination, Kieran, of that first cycle with John Herdman. Ever since 2011, he's had to come in and make massive changes. I mean, you look at just the roster that they had in 2012, it's really night and day with some of the players that were in that team. And that's, you know, not a knock on that team. That did punch way above their weight. And I know that there'll be people that will say that Canada may have not had business being where they were, but in fairness to them, they came together as a team. And I'm going to say this, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack from U.S. supporters. I believe that they probably should have won that match in the semifinals. I truly do. I think the stars were aligned on that night for them to win, and the U.S. just dug deep and found a way to get that result, but that's neither here nor there. But now Herdman has got his core together, and he is not afraid to throw a youngster into a big situation. You and I discussed this back in February after the North American qualification tournament for this Olympic Games, and he threw a mixed lineup out against the U.S. in the final of that tournament. Now, granted, did it matter in terms of the Olympics? No, because both teams have already had already qualified by that stance. But he is not afraid to make a change and to do something different in order for his team to be successful. And I think the leadership that team has with the likes of a Christine Sinclair and a Diana Matheson, with the youngsters as the players that you've said, on their day, I think that they could beat the best teams in the world.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. And that game it was part of London 2012, but obviously it was played in Manchester at Old Trafford. Arguably the greatest game I've ever seen in the 7 years, 8 years that I've been following women's football. I think it would be difficult to top that. I know if you're Canadian, obviously it's probably the worst, but unbelievable game, and certainly lives long in the memory for those who watched it and those who saw it. Haven't even mentioned Germany, mate. This is how strong this group is. Haven't even mentioned Germany. Sylvia Knight's last tournament as German coach. We know that Steffi Jones will be taking over after they finish up in Brazil. Again, good mix of young players and experience. The likes of Anja Mittag and Lena Gersling are in there. They have, of course, Jennifer Marijan and players like her who can really bring that bit of quality that can unlock a defence. They are still a team that are a force despite the shortcomings in 2015 and despite not qualifying for London 2012.
Well, I mean, if you're talking shortcomings, Kieran, one missed penalty, and that surely could have been the difference between Germany winning and not winning the World Cup. I mean, it came down to one moment, to be fair. But yeah, Germany team, you know, again, similar to Canada, gone are some of the more veteran players on that roster. Now all these young players are coming in and they're making a difference. You mentioned Marijan, and it's crazy to think that she's only, 23, 24 years old right now, but it feels like she's been around for quite a while. You have Loy Poults in there in the midfield, who I believe is back at full strength after missing a bit of time due to injuries. You know, for me, it is going to be the question of the goalkeeping, obviously, with Unger in between the posts for a long stretch of time, now no longer involved. You'd have to think that Schultz is going to be the number one, with Laura Benkarth the number two. The defense will have to help. That's going to be a big key factor for them. If they can be as strong defensively as they have been throughout their time under Sylvia Knight, then they will be a team that could be on the podium. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, we'll see. I think they're looking good. They've been, again, they have been impressive since the World Cup. But unfortunately, they've only had Euro qualifiers for us to judge them on, and they can sometimes be not the most competitive of matches, unfortunately. Of course, we saw them in the She Believes Cup with England and with the United States and came close to doing well in that. But of course, that was won by the United States. I think we'll wrap it up there, mate. As I said, big apologies that we can't give any insight to Zimbabwe. Just don't have the access to be able to watch them. So it's very, very difficult to give honest analysis. So rather than try and blag it, we'll move on. And after this break, we will concentrate our efforts on the final group, which is, of course, Group G. Right, so we heard from Linda Eriksson a little bit earlier about the chances of the Sweden team and a little bit about Group A. We now move on to, as we've discussed already, Group B, and I'm joined by our German correspondent Jasmina Schweimler to give us a little bit of insight into what the feelings are from the German public and media going in to the Rio Olympics. Jasmina, how are you? Well?
I'm doing just fine. I'm so glad to be back. It's been quite a while.
It's good to have you back. Obviously, you'll be with us a little bit more when the Bundesliga season starts. We're on a little bit of a break with the off-season. But, of course, the Olympics is just around the corner and Germany are one of the teams participating. I mean, I guess the first question I'd ask you is, what are the thoughts of people in Germany going into the Olympics? How optimistic are people?
From what I've seen, they are very optimistic, very much looking forward to the tournament, especially because, you know, Sylvia Knight's last tournament, we're all just excited to see how well she does, the team does. But one thing, the Germans are just not happy about the times. It's definitely going to mess up our sleeping schedule. That's going to be tough.
So you're talking about the German public as opposed to the German team. Yeah, it's not easy. I know from being in the UK, some of those games are going to kick off 2 o'clock our time, which is 3 o'clock in the morning your time. So not an easy one at all. I mean, what, in your view, are the chances when you look at the squad that Sylvia Knight has picked? What do you think the chances are of them winning a medal?
Looking at the squad that we have, I would definitely say that we are capable of winning gold, but when you look at the other teams that are competing, you know, I just don't want to underestimate anyone. So I'm just going to go with 50-50 because Australia obviously have improved a lot over the years. Then we have the United States, probably the best team in the world right now, but also teams like Sweden and Canada. So I don't really want to make a prediction yet.
Well, you're going to have to make a prediction later on because JJ and myself are going to write down our predictions and then we're going to discuss them after the tournament. Anthony Resch from Futsdel is going to do the same. So you're going to join us in making some predictions and then we will reveal them after the tournament has finished and see who was right and who was badly wrong. So you don't have to make them now. But you will be revealing them along with the rest of us after the tournament. I mean, when you look at the team, obviously missed London 2012. They didn't qualify after a disappointing World Cup on home soil in 2011. How important is it that the team does well having missed 2012?
I don't think that it's important to do well just because they missed out on the Olympics last time, because Germany don't have a bad reputation. And it certainly didn't ruin their reputation. They are a team that can win, and they made up for it by qualifying again. And I'm just excited to see how well they do now, because I'm very sure they will do well.
Okay. If they are to do well, where are the strengths in that team that will help them achieve what they want to?
Definitely the experience we have in the team. I mean, we have 6 players that have already played and competed at Olympic Games. And also the Germans are known to have a very strong mentality. And I think that's going to be one of the key factors in this tournament, especially looking at how many good teams are going to be there.
Okay. And I guess my final question would be, we know that Sylvia Knight will be stepping down from her position. She is due to leave her role as the head coach of the German team, and Steffi Jones will be coming in after the tournament. How much do you think this team want to win and do well for her, being that this is her last competition?
Sylvia Knight seems to be very relaxed, and she said it herself that she's relaxed and just happy to be able to compete at the Olympic Games. But I think for the players, the fact that this is going to be her last tournament is going to give her some extra motivation to do well and win gold. It's going to be a nice goodbye present, I would say.
Well, we shall find out. We shall see. 19th of August, the final is in the Maracanã. Will Germany be there? We will find out in just a couple of weeks' time. Jasmina, thank you for joining me. We will have you back on, I'm sure, over the course of the tournament. As I said, after the competition is finished, we will all get together and we will reveal our predictions. Enjoy the tournament and we'll speak to you soon.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So welcome back, JJ. Group G. Now, I said the last group could be Group of Death. This one could also be Group of Death, depending on who you're a fan of and who you're not a fan of. Group G contains gold medalists United States, contains New Zealand, France, and Colombia. So this is a difficult one. Not in terms of who could potentially come out on top, because I think we're both going to agree who that will be. But, of course, some of these teams have got to go to the Amazon rainforest and take part in Manaus. Now, we saw how difficult conditions can be at the 2014 World Cup when Colombia and USA come up against each other on the 9th of August in Manaus. How's that going to be?
I mean, this is almost kind of like just flashing back to 2 years ago and the U.S. men's team playing Portugal in the rainforest. And that was almost a win for the U.S., surprisingly enough. Jermaine Jones, I think, hit probably a goal of a lifetime for him in that, where he bent the ball around three guys and ended up rocketing off the underside of the crossbar. And then, look, for the U.S., they need to take care of business, win their first two matches, and then flex their squad rotation in the third one, purely because of the fact that that is going to be one travel nightmare for them. I've never been to Brazil, so I can't speak on how far of a flight that is, but that is across country going from, they're playing in Belo Horizonte, which is not exactly on the beach, but it's much cooler and less humid, space, as opposed to going to the rainforest. So, unfortunately for the players, and in my opinion, that are going to be squad members, or at least field player members, numbers 11 through 17, they're going to be playing in that match against Colombia. Now, on the other side, for Colombia, it's not to say that this is more of a home turf style match, but, the South American team in unnatural conditions, but in South America, you might have to give them the edge. But then again, the U.S. has just been, outside of that South Africa game, they've been on a roll for quite a while, and they've been scoring goals for fun. And I have a feeling, while they may tighten up, as sometimes we see in these major tournaments at times, France will obviously be a tough game for them in the second one, but the winner of that game wins the group. I think, as you and I said both, we're in agreement that the U.S. will win. And this is going to set up an interesting dilemma if, for France, that would set them up against the finisher, the winner of Group F. And I'm not sure that we're seeing a third-place team coming out of this group.
No, I agree. I think the third-place teams are coming out of the other two groups, because I think the top two teams in this group are likely to dominate, whereas the points could be shared a little bit more in the other two groups. I don't want to fall into a trap of talking too much about the United States, because obviously we cover the NWSL. You're from the US. I'm part of the NWSL Media Association alongside you. It could be very easy for us to fall into that trap of talking too long about them. But I just want to kind of maybe talk about some of the key points that have come out in the lead up to the tournament. And I guess the biggest talking point was the inclusion of Megan Rapinoe in the squad, having missed the whole of this season with an ACL injury. She's not been able to participate in any of the warm-up games either. She's come out in the media this week and said she doesn't anticipate being ready till probably later on in the tournament. She certainly won't play in the first game. I think she's ruled herself out of that one. What's your view on that? Do you think that she's fortunate to be in that squad, or is she one of those players that has that quality that you just cannot leave at home, even if she's not available for the whole competition?
I think it's honestly a combination of both, Karen. She is a bit fortunate in the sense that, well, let's say that she was 2 or 3 weeks behind in her progression of recovery than where she is right now, she probably doesn't make the team. But at the same time, she is world class. You can't leave a player like Megan Rapinoe home, even if she plays at 60%, if it was for the entire tournament, or you take the gamble, you hope that she gets herself fit enough to play a cameo in the second match, maybe 30 minutes in the third match, and builds progression towards the knockout stage. Kind of almost similarly to Canada with Diana Matheson, who, she wasn't healthy at the start of the World Cup last year, but made her way closer and closer as the tournament went on. But the big differences, of course, is the five-player difference in rosters from the World Cup to the Olympics. You can carry 23 for the World Cup and 20 of those being field players. For the Olympics, it's 16 field players and 18 total. So you have value there as alternates, but unfortunately, unless if you're a goalkeeper, the only way that you can make your way onto an actual roster is whether the team decides on the night prior, I believe, that one of their players just cannot go and then will replace with an alternate, and that will remain throughout the rest of the tournament. I don't think that's going to happen, Kieran, so it's a gamble. It is absolutely a gamble by Jill Ellis, because you're forfeiting a valuable field player that, again, with the short turnaround and the third game looming with the travel to the rainforest, that, you know, you may be asking a little bit too much out of some of the other players, even though it's crazy to say, but still, you may be asking a lot out of someone that's not normally used to playing this many minutes in a short amount of time. They are professionals. They're going to try to get, you know, find a way to get the job done. But still, that is something to keep in mind.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the US and Colombia play in the knockout phase of the World Cup last year?
That would be correct, yes.
And the US came out, was it 2-0?
2-0, that was in the round of 16. That was also one of those matches where the U.S. picked up multiple yellow cards and players that were already sitting on yellow cards. So I think it was actually Rapinoe that missed the next match.
I think it's Rapinoe and Lauren Holiday off the top of my head.
That's correct, yeah. So, yeah, no, I mean, all these four teams have a lot of history between each other.
Yeah, of course, of course. So, and as I said, don't want to dwell too much on the United States. I think the Rapinoe inclusion was probably the biggest talking point that has kind of come out of that squad announcement from Jill Ellis. Of course, they are the current gold medalists, and I'm sure that many will be tipping them to succeed again. But as we've said, JJ and I will not be making our predictions public until after the tournament, because we can see how right or indeed how wrong we were. There are, of course, three other teams that we haven't mentioned yet, JJ. Colombia, well, we've mentioned them because obviously they played the US in the World Cup last year. I guess for me, when I look at that squad, there is a lot of talent in there. One name that is missing, of course, is Yareli Rincon. Now, we know her as being, probably along with Lady Andrade, the two kind of stars of this team. I believe, if I remember rightly, there's been some ongoing issues with Yareli Rincon and the coach, and that's why I think, along with a couple of other players, they haven't been included, which it's a shame, isn't it? Because to deprive a player of representing your country at an Olympics, and to try and give your team the best opportunity of progressing, it's unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, you look at this now for Colombia, this tournament being played in Brazil, it's close enough where you can get yourself a little bit of support there. But the matches that we've seen, at least I've seen when they played the U.S. in friendlies earlier on this year, they look far from where they were even last year. To be quite fair, they're going to have a tough time. It's a mixed team, but a lot of younger players that are in this squad. But they're going to have to deal with a lot of toughness, and they got to play France first. Now their match against New Zealand, the second, that's going to be their best opportunity. They're going to have to, you don't want to guess, but they're going to have to hold on for the two matches against France and the U.S. Maybe they hope by the time they play the U.S., that they've already qualified to the next round, maybe have already clinched a first place spot and don't have to do much in that final one and take advantage of that. But, yeah, they're going to hang on, hope for a couple of bounces, and if they get opportunities, they're going to have to finish them.
Yeah, and they're a team not to be underestimated. They showed at the World Cup last year. They've got some quality in there, and they certainly won't be the whipping team of this tournament, that's for sure. I mean, when you look at the other two teams, France and New Zealand, you know what you're getting with France. Class all over the field, perennial underachievers in major tournaments, and really should, on paper, be meddling. But we know the troubles that they've had in major tournaments. Is this now the time for the French national team to step up to the plate and potentially go... Well, actually, I'm not going to ask you to whether they're going to win a gold medal, because, as I said, predictions are being kept secret until after the tournament, but... Is this a time that France need to step up to the plate rather than will they step up to the plate? Is there a need for the France team to show what they can do in this tournament now, JJ?
You know, if you asked me this question last year, I would have said, yes, they need it. I think they always want to step up. Do they need it? I don't know. That's going to be one of those that you're going to have to ask for yourselves. They'll need to step up at the next World Cup because that's going to be on their home turf. They'll want to represent themselves in front of their home fans, and they, you know, they get great support there. But, you know, in a tournament like this, it's tough. The one advantage that they do have is that the majority of that team already plays with each other year-round, as Lyon dominates that roster. So in terms of questioning of getting tactics correct and, you know, having that coming together phase, there's not going to really be much of an issue there as they play with each other year-round. The U.S. match is going to be one thing. Playing the other two teams, I think that's going to be another. They should be able to handle themselves fine enough in the group stage. But, you know, as I said before, winning or losing your group could make the difference in if you medal or not. You lose the group here. Projected, I would have them. I know you're not going to say make predictions, but I'm just going to say this one right now. I still think Germany's going to win their group. And guess what? It's going to be a France-Germany quarterfinal if France cannot win their group. And that's not ideal. Granted, yes, you know, the alternate would be playing a third place team and then the possibility of playing Brazil in the semifinals in Brazil, but it's really night or day. You know, if France can show up for all three of their group matches, that's going to help them a lot more than showing up for two of them and then losing out to the U.S.
We don't want another France-Germany quarterfinal. We had that at the World Cup last year and everyone was gutted, weren't they, because you had two of the best teams in the tournament coming up against each other too early on. So I don't want that one. And if I remember rightly, I think it was that game that Gaëtan Tine missed that chance. And we haven't really seen her in the French setup since then, which is, I think it's a blow for them because I think Tine could certainly be the difference in that team. But of course, as you say, lots of quality in that team. I think 12 of the 18 players that are in their squad represent Lyon, and obviously Amandine Henry has only just left the club, so he could in theory make that 13. New Zealand, obviously the last team in that group, mate. I actually spoke to Rosie White, the New Zealand striker who plays over here for Liverpool Ladies recently, and she knows that they're underdogs, but actually they were disappointed with their World Cup performance last year. They know they underachieved. They were in a group where they maybe could have done better than they did. They're looking to make an impression, and they certainly won't be looking to make up the numbers, but I think it's going to be tough for them, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, Kieran, I think at this point right now, we know that New Zealand, they're a player. They're, you know, this is not something that's unheard of. They've gotten themselves into knockout rounds of the last, you know, within the last couple of major tournaments. They've had some big results go their way, but I think the shock factor is worn off. This is a group that has been together with each other for a long time, but you know, you kind of look at it right now. If you can contain Ali Riley on the flank, if you can limit the chances to Hearn and Gregorius up top, then you're probably going to win the match. I mean, you know, that's not just to say that's pretty straightforward, but you know, again, you look at a lot of these players, they've been around for a while. Plenty of them. In fact, I'm trying to count here. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11 of the 18 have gotten themselves over 70 caps. And a lot of those players are still, you know, not to say they're not old, they're in their 20s. But that's a team that's been around for a while. They know what they need to do within themselves to get the job done. So on their day, and if they could get help elsewhere, they might be able to duplicate what they did in 2012 and get one of those third place bids and get into the knockout rounds.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? You mentioned all those players with over 70 caps. You've got players like Katie Bowen, who people will know plays for FC Kansas City. She's only, what, 22? She's already got 37 caps. Rosie White, at 23 years old, has 81 caps at 23, which almost seems ridiculous. So there's plenty of experience in there. Yes, they may be young players, but they are not alien. They are not unfamiliar with playing for their national team. I think the thing that concerns me about New Zealand is that their qualification is such a walkover. They never struggle to qualify for these major tournaments, especially now that Australia play in the much more competitive Asian qualification. It's not, I hate to say it, but it's not competitive for New Zealand in the lead up to the Olympics, and they rely very much on the friendlies that they can play. And I just wonder how many high profile and competitive friendlies they can participate in before they come up against the likes of France, United States and Colombia, and the same for when they play in future tournaments. So definitely something that I guess they need to probably be looking at. But mate, we'll wrap up Group G there. Oh, actually, no, we won't. I'll tell you what we forgot to do in the last group as well, is to predict the top three and pick our player out. So let's go back. Group F, how are you picking the 1, 2, 3?
Okay, so I've got Germany as one. I'm still very much undecided on Kieran who's going to be 2 and 3, because that's all going to come down to that first match between Canada and Australia, who's going to get the bump. Though I do say Canada's going to get the 2 barely. Not to say that this is any knock on Australia. I think that they very well could win the group or finish second, but I think just how close the three teams are, I'm putting Australia 3, and I know I'm also going to get a lot of grief for that as well, and that's going to set them up in the rematch of last year's round of 16 in Moncton against Brazil.
At JJ Duke, if you do want to give him some stick.
That'd be at JJ Duke 21.
At JJ Duke 21. If you're going to try and get people to give you stick, make sure you get the handle right. And what about player to look out for in the group?
You know, I think I mentioned it in the preview that Melanie Leupolz is coming off that injury and getting herself back fit. I think she is world class on her day. Even just being a young player, one of the stars, and I think it was 2012 under 20 World Cup, and I think she's only just continued in leaps and bounds to grow. So I'm going to have her as my player to watch.
Okay, well, I'm going to go slightly different, mate. I agree with you that Germany will win the group, but I am going to go Australia to finish second. I have a lot of faith in this team. Impressed me at the World Cup last year. I was out in Winnipeg when they played their opening couple of games in Canada last year. I'm going to go Canada third. I do think they're a quality side, but this group is so difficult to call. Unfortunately, I do see Zimbabwe. I think they'll be lucky to get a point, to be honest with you, mate. I don't see them getting anything out of this group, and I think it is a straightforward 1-2-3 with Germany, Canada and Australia, but it's going to be differing. People are going to have differing opinions, and I'm going Germany over Australia with Canada in third, but I do see all three teams qualifying. My player to watch in that group actually is a player that, again, is from Australia, and I thought she was phenomenal at the World Cup last year, and that's Elise Kellen-Knight. I thought she was phenomenal in midfield. I think she is a real engine and makes that team tick, and maybe doesn't get the plaudits that she deserves, but I'm going to go with Elise Kellen-Knight. Mate, do you want to make your predictions? 1, 2, 3 for Group G?
Yeah, let's go with the number one. That'll be the U.S. I think you and I are pretty locked up on that. Number two is going to be France. 3 and 4 is difficult. I'm saying that the third place teams are coming from the other group, so this is just more elementary. But you and I were just talking about the types of matches that New Zealand gets. Well, here's something for you. This year, New Zealand has played a grand total of 9 matches this year. They've won 2, one of those being Papua New Guinea. I guess you could technically call it 10, because the return match, that would have been the Olympic qualifier, the second leg of Oceania. Papua New Guinea forfeited that match. So I guess technically 3 wins. And losses to Brazil, Netherlands, Australia, draws with Russia, Iceland, and 1 with Australia. And the other win came against Portugal. I'm going to put Colombia 3, New Zealand 4.
Yeah, well, we have exactly the same 1, 2, 3, 4 for that group then, mate. Who's your player to look out for?
It's interesting. I think we'll go with France. And I think it's not going to be much of a surprise, but I'm going to go with Abelie. I don't know why. I just have a feeling that, this is going to be caps close to, 150. We're right on there. She's at 145 right now. So if they go deep enough, she'll probably be able to hit that. But a veteran leader in that team, scored that class goal in a recent tune-up match against Canada. Set piece, always deadly there. And that's something that's going to be a deal breaker in this tournament. You don't get a lot of chances in the knockout rounds, and if you can have someone that can take free kicks and score, then you might as well go for it. So I'm going to go with Eboli.
Okay. Well, I was going to go with Lavoisier, but I think seeing as you've gone France, I'm going to move over to the United States because I'm sure you've deliberately avoided them to not sound like you're a homer.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll do the honours then, mate. And I think it's difficult for me to not look past. I was tempted to go with Crystal Dunn, but based on the hype, based on what we've seen so far, and based on the future that this player has, I've got to go Malpieu. She is lightning, absolute rockets in her boots, and she will leave defenders for dead throughout the whole tournament. She has raw pace, she's very direct, she's got a lot of skill, she's not just a one-trick pony, and at 18, I think she is due to light up this tournament, and I do think she has, as I say, big future ahead of her, but she has a big present as well, so Malpieu would be my player to look out for. But I think we will, my friend, after this break, we will wrap things up and maybe not make our winning predictions, but maybe we'll make a few other predictions before we close up. So one of our guests for this show, as we mentioned in the introduction, is Anthony Resch from our friends at Foot Del. Obviously looking forward to the French chances of how they may fare at the Olympics. Anthony, thank you very much for joining me. Are you well? Looking forward to the Olympics, I'm sure.
I'm working a lot during this day. It's a great period for us.
Absolutely. Lots to look forward to. Well, we want to focus on France. We're just going to have a short chat.
Yeah.
JJ and I have already had a little bit of a chat about how we feel about the French team. What's the feeling in France about the team going into the Olympics? Is there a belief that this could be the year for France, that they get a medal? Could it be gold? Could it be silver or possibly bronze? Or how do people feel? How do the media feel in France about this Rio Olympics?
I would say that there are two feelings in France for the medias. We have covered World Cup, Euro, many competition with the French team, and this team with Louise Anissip, Kadamuro, Camille Abili, Wendy Renard, etc. Gets a great talent, but this year, my feeling for this year for the Olympic Games is that this French team is very, very focused on her its target, the medal. It's the word in all conversation, medal, only one medal. Gold, silver, and bronze, but they want come back home with her medal for her, for the team, for the players, and for the country. Because you know, in France nowadays, the women's soccer is a sport in progress. It's improving a lot during these 2 years, and if will be a medal in three weeks, it will be very, very important for the sport.
20 Sorry, go on. And, carry on.
And moreover, for the fans that I met in stadiums during the preparation, obviously they believe that the French team can come back home, can come back country with a medal.
This squad in particular, you have a nice balance between experience and young players. Gone are, you don't have players like Bonpastor and Soubrayon, but you do have players like Lavoisier and Mbok Barthe. Is there a feeling that this is the best team that France has had and therefore has the best chance of a medal?
Probably, yeah. I agree with you because in this team, there are many players who get talents and Claire Lavogé and the young player Claire Lavogé, Gurridge Mbokbati, Amel Majri, Sakina Karchaoui. They are young players, but they are improving a lot during this month.
Where do you think the strength is in this team? Where do you think if they are going to win a medal, what's the main thing that's going to help them do that?
My feeling for these Olympic Games is that team is a team. Not personal case, not star. Everybody is going to the same target, the medal. It's the world of this competition for this player. And as far as I am concerned, I'm thinking that this team is the best in the history of French soccer team.
Okay. Is there any doubts within France, the supporters, the media, about the mental strength of this France team? We know that they have talent. We know that they have lots of experience, lots of players that from Lyon who have won lots of trophies. But when it comes to the national team and when it comes to big tournaments, France seem to have a problem getting beyond maybe that quarterfinal stage, because we have seen them quarterfinals at the Olympics, absolutely dominated against Canada in 2012 and ended up losing. We saw them outplay Germany at the World Cup in Canada, ended up losing on penalties. Is there any doubt about the mental strength of this team, or is it just bad luck that they haven't been able to overcome those matches?
To my mind, is the mental. And this year, I'm thinking that the mental of French team is great. Just an element during the preparation in July, there was a game between France and Canada in Auxerre. And during this match, French team was completely dominated. Only two or three action situation and one goal. If you remember, this situation was not exactly in the past. And I'm thinking that the element is very, very important for the competition in Brazil. And the most topic in discussion in relation with players is that the prize list is empty. No medal, no trophy in the prize list, and the players are looking like very, very focused on the prize list.
How, I guess my final question is, how much do these players want to win for the likes of Louisa Nesib? We know that she is going to be retiring after this tournament. There are players that are, not many, but there are some players. Camille Labelli is one in her early 30s. This could be her last Olympics. We don't know. I'm sure she'll play in the World Cup in 2019, being that it's a home tournament for you guys. But how much do they want to win? Because it could well be a case of now or a long time down the road.
My answer will be in one sentence. This is the last chance of these players, like Camille Abili, Louisa Nesib, Poverdi, Elise Busaglia, and you know, in a career, when you arrive at this moment, the last moment, the last competition in your career, if you are better on the field, you are better on training, you are more concentrated, focused on your targets, etc., etc. And my impression, my feeling during this preparation in Clairefontaine, in France, in Paris, is that the Camille Abili and other players are in this state of mind. They know that Olympic Games in Rio, in Brazil, is her last chance.
Okay, so my very final question, this is my final question: are France going to win a medal? I'm not going to ask you which colour. Are they going to win a medal?
Very great question. I'm thinking that France will win a bronze medal.
Okay, we shall see. Anthony, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you too.
Women's Soccer Zone. Listen to the show on Audio Boom or download via iTunes. Just search for Women's Soccer Zone.
Okay, welcome back. JJ, as I said, we're going to close the show up. We're going to leave the predictions for the winner, the top scorer, and maybe the bronze and the silver medalists until after the tournament. But I guess one of the things I could ask you is, what in terms of predictions, which group game do you predict being the one that's maybe going to light the tournament up and get us going early on?
So basically, first off, what you're saying is I can't do what my planned gig of releasing all my picks on the day of the tournament. This is what you're saying, correct?
Absolutely.
Killing me. All right, fine. Let's see here. Of the group stage, well, I think we've already highlighted that Canada and Australia, the first match of Group F, I think that will be a real good one to keep an eye on, purely because of the fact that there's so much riding on it. But it is going to be the first match as well, so there will be some shaky moments. So of the final matches, yeah, let's go with this one. Germany-Canada on the 9th of August in Brasilia. I think that's going to be a good one because we're seeing two young cores going at it against each other. And I think at that point for Canada, we'll know what their identity of this tournament is. They will come off the match of Zimbabwe. I think at that point they will need to know, you know, what is it going to take to be successful in the knockout rounds at that time. They may mix things up a little bit, as we've seen from John Herdman. So I think those are the two ones that I'll be watching with a little more emphasis on.
Okay. I'm going to go France-USA. Sounds obvious, but I do believe, if I remember rightly as well, they played each other in the group stages in London. I think it was it a six-goal thriller in that one? Did USA
that
win
4-2? Fact, the first match of that group.
Yeah.
And that was where...
Was it played up in Scotland at Hampden Park?
They played at Hampden Park. France scored twice within the first 15 minutes. Also, that's where Shannon Box went down with an injury. And that's where Alex Morgan scored twice. And Carly Lloyd came in as a substitute.
That's right.
Scored, and she never looked back.
That's right. Didn't start the tournament, but certainly finished it on the high. So, yeah, that's my group... match to look out for, and you've obviously made yours. Who do you think is going to be player of the tournament?
Oh, so we are going to release the player of the tournament.
Okay. No, we said top scorer. I didn't say anything about player of the tournament. Who's your prediction for player of the tournament?
Ooh. All right.
You've said player to watch, but that doesn't necessarily mean player of the tournament.
Didn't think about that one. Okay, I'm going to go with one that's not really so much of a surprise. Amadou Henry. Why not? She's world class. If France is going to be successful in this tournament, it's going to be her that's going to have to drive that team holding down the midfield. Obviously now, one thing to keep an eye on, unlike the rest of her teammates who don't often play in hot, humid conditions, she's a little bit more used to that, playing a couple of matches here in the States. So might be able to pass along a couple of things. And yeah, I think that's who I'm picking as the player of the tournament.
I'm going Marta. I think home tournament, this is her time. I think this is going to be the tournament that she lights up. I certainly hope so for the sake of the home supporters. And I think it's always nice to see the home nation do well. It's a shame if they underperform or they go out early. And I think they're going to be relying heavily on her. But I do think that she's going to step up to the plate. And I certainly hope that she is going into the latter stages of the tournament and really shows why so many people consider her to be the best player ever to play in the women's game. So I'm going to go with Marta as my prediction for player of the tournament. And of course, we'll add this to our list of the other predictions that we make along the way after the tournament. But JJ, we'll wrap it up there, mate. Thanks very much for joining us. I know this hasn't been a particularly in-depth look at the Olympics, but I think there's other people, as I said, who've done that, and I'm sure there are some really good outlets who've kind of covered it already, but certainly this is a bit of a snapshot of what we're looking ahead to. So thanks for joining me, buddy.
Absolutely. I always like to do something different. So more predictions. I like it. I like predictions.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Let's see if you like them at the end of the tournament when we reveal what we've written down. But listeners, as always, thank you very much for tuning in. Really, really hope that you enjoy the Olympics. After the World Cup, it is by far the biggest competition in the women's game. And certainly we hope that it's as good as it was in London 2012, because I can say from personal experience, I absolutely loved 2012. Got to see a lot of the games, being that I live here and live in London. So I do hope the Rio matches up, and if it can better it, even better. So in the meantime, if you want to contact us, you can do. We're on Twitter on @WosoZone. Email us anytime you like on wosozone@gmail.com. Listen to the show either on Audioboom, audioboom.com/channel/WosoZone, or on iTunes. So until next time, enjoy the Olympics. I'm sure we will bring you some shows during the course of the tournament. But until then, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.